Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hi, Mark. You know, we've been doing this program for more than 4 years. But for our listeners who really want to have an education as to what is available out there, especially to the what is available to each individual investor, there's really very little in by way of good quality material or even a good quality site.
That's right, Mona. I know we focus specifically on EB5, and sure, I'm going to be biased. I think we're the best resource available for the U.S.-focused EB5 program. But for those investors that want to perhaps get a broader view, perhaps outside the U.S., perhaps outside of EB5, and maybe they want to read Vice Listen, there is a great resource for that, isn't there?
That's right. And we're very happy today to have the editor of that resource, the Investment Migration Insider, Christian. Welcome, Christian.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, we are excited to have you, but let me go ahead and give a quick intro to the listener that may not be familiar with you. Christian Henrik Nesheim is a founder and editor of Investment Migration Insider. He is an internationally recognized expert, speaker, documentary producer, and writer on the subject of investment migration. His work has been cited in The Economist, Bloomberg, Fortune, Forbes, Newsweek, and Business Insider. I wonder which of those are his favorite. He's Norwegian by birth. Christian has spent the last 14 years in the United States, China, and Spain. Christian, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Christian, there are very few outlets out there for anyone who really wants to understand a non-biased view of citizenship and migration, you know, by investment. So what gave you the idea to put up this platform?
I think one of the reasons that there aren't many unbiased or impartial, let's say, outlets out there is that when you're a media outlet, you have to make money as a media outlet. And so most of the media outlets out there, or most of the people who write and make content on investment migration, do that as an ancillary thing to their main business, which is being a service provider in the investment migration industry. Their main thing is to serve clients, and then to find more clients, they produce content. Whereas I don't have any clients. I don't help people get EB-5 visas or passports in the Caribbean. My clients are my readers, and my readers are the people who work in this industry. And so it's kind of like, you know, every industry has its own trade magazine. You know, there's a Golfer's Digest, there's a Plumber's Weekly, whatever.
I want to know what the Plumber's Weekly.
So I'm the Plumber's Daily for the invest migration industry. So the people I'm talking to are people who are well-versed in invest migration and not necessarily the investors themselves.
Well, actually, we like to pride ourselves on this program as being a little non-biased too. I know we tend to have a lot of things which are a little New York-centric, but on the whole, we have included regional centers all from and experts from our competition from all over the country. Mm-hmm. And the idea is not that you're here to promote your expertise, which does come out, by the way, just generally when you're speaking, but to give the audience an unbiased view or a view to really enhance education.
Yeah, I think because I don't have a horse in any of these races, yeah. I think that I can sort of be impartial when it comes to this. But of course, I've also been told that even though I'm an editor, but I have my personal opinions that sometimes they're hard to...
Oh, I've read your opinions. They're excellent. And you're an excellent writer, Christian. You've been quoted in some of the major periodicals, Bloomberg and...
I'm most proud of The Economist because it's always been my favorite magazine. And I was very, very proud to be quoted in The Economist.
Yeah, I do like The Economist myself. I would encourage anyone who's interested in this area to have a look at your platform. It's an excellent source.
Yeah, Mona, I'm looking at Investment Migration Insider right now, and it is really nice. Let me ask you a question, though. How do you get the information for some of your articles?
Well, in the beginning, when it was just me and we weren't making any money, we were just losing money. I was just trying to get it started. It was just me looking at Google Alerts. I put out Google Alerts on any program that I could think of, any industry figure, notable industry figure that I could think of.
We do the same.
Yeah. And then the Google Alerts have come in. Now, of course, over time, what happened is that people started reading IMI and people started bringing me stories. People started WhatsApping me saying, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen that? People started trying to get me to write dirt on their competitors. People started trying to give them free promotions. And then, you know, little by little, you sort of start developing this intuition for, you know, what is promotional, what is slander, and what is news. And then, yeah, you start just picking up on that and start publishing that. Now I have, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of sources around the world that just bring me material. And then I pick the most interesting of that. So it really is a community effort, like you point out, Mark. Mm-hmm.
You actually have to be very on top of the program. I mean, we read every single thing out there to just to stay ahead of EB5. So I can imagine that it's a lot of work.
Yeah. And I have to admit, okay, when it comes to EB5, I do defer to other authorities. I am not an authority on EB5. There are good publications out there on EB5. There wasn't a good publication for the industry from a global perspective.
That's true.
And yes, it's true. As you point out, Mona, we do have to really stay on top of it. When I picked the URL, which is imidaily.com, it was sort of a challenge to myself, right? Because now I really have to stay on top. You know, it's not IMI semi-daily. I really have to keep pushing that out. So yeah, it's a challenge staying on top. But at least I have a lot of people helping me, a lot of people bringing me material.
Christian, I just noticed that you do have a lot of information related to certain European countries. And I'm not going to ask you just yet as to the American programs, but with these European countries, we've seen a lot of changes over the last few years. We've seen an increase, for example, an uptake in Turkey and perhaps other European markets like the UK slipping.
Yeah, that's right. I think what we've seen in the last few years, if you go back to 2010, let's say, there was only 3 or 4 residence by investment programs in Europe, right? And that's now blossomed into a beautiful industry of about 25 different residence by investment programs, as well as 3 or 4 citizenship by investment programs in Europe. So there's been on the supply side, there's been tremendous growth. And later when we get to talking about EB5 and E2, and part of the reason why the people who have ended up in retrogression in the EB5 program, they have sort of started flowing toward Europe, is that those programs now exist. In the early years of EB5, there wasn't that much competition in Europe or competition from Europe. But yeah, there's definitely been tremendous growth on the supply side in Europe and on the demand side, but it's taken a little bit of time to get there.
So when I first entered the EB5 industry, which was back in 2006, the big competition at that point was Canada. It wasn't really Europe at all. Europe came much, much later. And I agree with you, there was very little in by the way of competition at that time.
Yeah. So, okay, in Canada, so you had the federal, I presume you're talking about the federal program, right?
Right,
which ended
right,
in
right.
2013,
the,
2014.
The original program was about 450, and that was why the EB5 started at really 500,000, because that was a more competitive figure.
Yeah. So back then, there was hardly anything in Europe. I mean, there was the UK Tier 1, but it was, a million British pounds. And then there were some smaller programs in Gibraltar and Isle of Man, but they were not really big programs, and you kind of had to be physically present for most of them. Really started gaining steam after the first, there was a 2008-09 financial crisis, was started in 07 really with the subprime crisis in the US. But then after that in Europe in 2010, 11, 12, you had a sovereign debt crisis in the southern European countries, the ignominiously known pigs, which were Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, who had sovereign debt crises, and as a result, were really strapped for cash. And so a lot of them had, say, legal provisions on their books to have a residence by investment program. And then they formalized that in many ways, so that instead of simply having a legal provision that allows, quote unquote, in special circumstances or in exchange for a considerable contribution, they made a standardized formulaic type of program whereby investors from third countries could obtain a residence in that country in exchange for investment.
Yeah, we started noticing this because we were in China a lot. And the programs for Portugal and Spain started increasing, I would say more around about 2014-ish. That's when we really started seeing a change in movement with the migration, the migration folk in China.
Yeah. So prior to 2013, there was very little movement in Europe. Yeah. But then after 2013, 2014, and then peaking, you know, maybe in 2018, 2019, you had a lot of people who may initially have been prospective EB-5 applicants saying, look, let's say you're in 2016, right? And you have this retrogression just getting crazy, you know, 15, 20 year wait times for the Chinese and then Indians now and the Vietnamese. And they're saying, look, maybe the American dream isn't the only dream worth having. You know, maybe
it's a Greek dream.
It's a beautiful dream, but I don't want to wait 20 years for this American dream.
Well, that's a little exaggeration. It's not 20 years. And actually, it's only India is not in retrogression, but the Chinese definitely are.
And so I think a lot of people had their eyes open to the European options, as well as to E2, which I'm sure we'll get into later.
Yeah. Well, it's important for a lot of our developers to listen to, I feel, because we in America tend to think that we're the center of the universe. It's an arrogance which that we have in Britain also. So when you hear about an investor saying, no, I chose Cyprus over you, we go, what? You went to Cyprus over the US?
It's almost offensive.
Yeah, indeed. And you did an amazing article, actually, which I was very impressed at, because you arrived at some really sort of, you did a deep dive and you got some exact figures about exactly how much money had been spent over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I think regular readers of IMI will tell you that we really are a data-driven publication in many ways. Part of it is because of my personality. I really enjoy playing around with spreadsheets and aggregating data and looking at trends. And so pretty regularly, we'll do some of these analyses wherein we compare, you know, which programs are growing quickly, which programs are slowing down, which are the big gainers and losers this year. This kind of thing. And so I think the article you're referring to is the article I wrote about 10 days ago called The 10 Biggest Investment Migration Programs Raised a Collective $10 Billion Last Year.
This is such an interesting article, Christian. And you do talk about the 10 highest grossing programs. What was so interesting to me is the fact that number 10 is the Maltese program in Malta. And now Malta being such a small little teeny island, it's like, how can this be the 10th highest grossing program of 2019?
Well, two chief reasons for that. First of all, it's a very attractive program because it's an EU country, right? So, and it's a citizenship program, which means that you're essentially getting citizenship in, well, you're only getting citizenship in Malta, but by virtue of having citizenship in Malta, which is an EU country, you also automatically have settlement rights in the other 26 or 27, depending on pre or post Brexit, countries that are in that union. And so it's obviously a very expensive program. You have to put down quite a substantial investment for that. So they're at number 10, 280 million, and that was in their fiscal year 2019. They report their revenues on a fiscal year basis, just like the US does. And then number 9 is the Australia Significant Investor
Visa.
I'm
going to just interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I think countries like Malta and other countries are really desirable is the tax advantage that you get from being a citizen.
Well, it depends on whether or not you're ordinarily resident there. I always am very careful starting to talk about tax because, first of all, I'm not licensed to give that type of advice. And I always encourage people to talk to a tax attorney when it comes to that, because obviously your immigration status and your tax residency status are two different things. And so, you know, if you live in Malta regularly, it's not necessarily that low tax. But if you are not ordinarily resident, you can, as far as I understand it, you can enjoy some of the same benefits that you can if you're, say, a non-dom in the UK.
That's right. So you have on your same list, you have number 9 is Australia, which I thought would be further up and not number 9.
Yeah, Australia. Well, so number nine, they're making a lot more money than Malta, right? So the gap between number 10 and number nine is pretty big.
Yeah.
280 million to 703 million. Then the next one after that is Spain, the golden visa that they have there, 850 million. And then Greece, which is, well, actually Greece should be number eight and then Spain should be number seven. But Greece was sort of a dark horse until a year and a half ago. They became very, very popular, grew very prodigiously over the last 2-3 years to the point where they are, in terms of the number of applications that they get, they are now by far the biggest in Europe. Although not by, if you measure it in investment, because their minimum investment requirement is about half of what it is in Spain.
Right. And you have at this time, which is going to be very interesting in 2020, number six being the New Zealand investment visa. This year, we've heard post-COVID that everybody wants to go and live in New Zealand.
Yeah, everybody wants a bunker, right, in New Zealand somewhere. Everybody wants a place where they can store their canned food.
I'm serious. 2020, I'm sure your figures are going to be so different.
Retire in the Shire.
Yeah, retire in the Shire. That's a great phrase. No, and I'm sure you're right, Mona. So these figures obviously are mostly pre-pandemic,
yeah,
right, depending on the fiscal year. But yeah, they're pre-pandemic, and so I think you're completely right. Come this time next year, when we do the same analysis again, these figures are going to look entirely different. And I think one of the winners will be the Portugal Golden Visa. I mean, Portugal, as a person who reports on a lot of data for the investment migration industry, I really love Portugal's Borders and Immigration Service, the SEF, because they release fantastic data. I really have to give it to them. They release monthly data, not only on the number of applicants and the number of dependents, but also on nationalities and on specifically which options the investor migrants chose to invest in, which is very helpful for me in terms of pinpointing the trends. I mean, because you have inter-program trends and then you have intra-program trends. And what we're seeing in Portugal is, whereas in the past, 90% of people would choose the conventional 500,000 euro investment in real estate, but now the proportion that are choosing what I call alternative assets, which are really just any option except the 500,000 real estate, that's now grown to 35% during the course of the last few years.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very interesting how that's getting diversified.
Well, it also reflects the fact that a lot of Chinese are not coming to the United States and they are moving more towards Europe.
Yeah, although I would say that trend is more pronounced in Greece, because if you look at Portugal, if you go back, you need only go back to 2017 and all the years prior to 2017, Portugal's nationality distribution was made up of more than 80% Chinese, right? And then in 2020 so far, they are just a quarter of the total. And so the Chinese are not dominating the Portuguese program like they used to. They've moved on to dominating the Greek program, where they are now almost 90% of the applicant base. So that's, you know, a lot of the people who used to, let's put it this way, a lot of the Chinese who used to go to EB-5, then they said, okay, now let's go to Portugal. And then they said, oh, hey, now Greece is half the price of Portugal. Let's go to Greece.
Yeah.
Right. And so the Chinese, you have to remember that the Chinese, traditionally, they've accounted for about 2/3 of the global investment migration market. So whatever the Chinese, whatever they become enamored with, that's going to be a very successful program. And I think that's what explains the meteoric rise of the Greek Golden Visa.
Yep. And then you go to the UK, which is always traditionally there, but it's moved down to number four.
Yeah. The UK hasn't really, I mean, it's stayed pretty level for the last several years. There was actually a spike after the referendum. I mean, I can actually, you know, this is one of the great things about IMI is that you can go to any of the program pages and you'll see the statistics for each individual program. So if I go to the UK Tier 1 program page right now, I can tell you exactly when the spikes came for this program. So in 2016, after the referendum, it started growing very fast. And I think that was because people were saying, look,
because of Brexit, we can't get there any other way.
Exactly. I can't get there now with my Portuguese residence permit, right? If I want my kids to go to Eton, I actually have to specifically immigrate to the UK or get a resident, ILR, as it's called there.
So the next country really does interest me, because the next country you have is, surprisingly, it's Turkey at number three. But what we have seen is that the growth in Turkey has corresponded with the growth in the E2 program, because Turkey is one of those countries where you don't have to pay too much. You get your passport pretty quickly and you're eligible for the E2 program.
Yes, it's true. There, I mean, it has coincided with the growth in E2. Now, I don't have the figures of, you know, how many Turks or Turkish citizens, maybe they are recently naturalized Turkish citizens, who are getting E2. I mean, I do have the figures. I would have to look for it in my statistics here. But I don't know if I would necessarily credit Turkey's being an E2 treaty country with the rise of the Turkish CIP. I think there are other factors that explain that, notably that, because, you know, obviously there are other countries that have E2, like Grenada has E2. And in my opinion, the Grenada citizenship is probably a higher quality citizenship in terms of, well, definitely is in terms of travel freedom.
Well, we've also noticed a lot of our Iranian clients have opted to go for Turkish citizenship also. So perhaps these are other factors.
So when I say other factors, I mean that Turkey, and I have to be careful in how I phrase this, because I don't want to alienate anybody, but I think that Turkey in some ways has become a destination for people who may not be, let's say they're not eligible, perhaps, everywhere else. So, for example, if you're Iranian, you know, you may be a perfectly upstanding citizen, but just by virtue of your nationality, there are lots of countries and lots of programs out there that just don't want the trouble.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
yeah.
just there too much compliance, too much due diligence.
Grenada doesn't accept you actually as an Iranian.
So if you look at the top 10 countries in Turkey that who are actually applying, you'll find that the top 10, not nine of them are countries from that region or the Middle East, the wider region. And then China is in there as well in the top 10.
And then your number two country is Cyprus. That, again, is something I find very interesting, because I remember Cyprus in the 90s, which was very British. And you go to Cyprus now, it's become very Russian.
Yeah. What is it they call Limassol now? Little St. Petersburg, yeah. Or little Odessa or something like that? I forget. But yeah, it is. It's very, very popular with the Russians. If you go to Cyprus, you'll see lots of Russian street signs and restaurants. And it's quite the community. But yeah, they are. I mean, that's a program that's been consistently making money since 2011, at least, when they had their last major revamp. Since then, it's gone through a long series of successive, more marginal amendments, chiefly on the due diligence side, because, yes, there. I mean, the Cypriots have to admit that in the past, their vetting standards were not entirely up to par, and they've recognized that. And they've gradually improved those vetting standards, gradually improved the integrity of their program. Now, of course, recently they were attacked by Al Jazeera for having, in the past, naturalized people who later turned out to be unsavory characters, let's say. But they did, to be fair, fulfill the requirements of the Cyprus CIP at the time.
Right.
So I think a lot of the reaction that we saw in Cyprus to that was that, hey, look, guys, Al Jazeera, this is not fair. We know that we didn't have the greatest due diligence like 5 years ago, but we've fixed all that now. Why are you bringing up these guys? You know, it's not like we can kick them out, because they didn't misrepresent themselves when they were applying and they were accepted. So I think a lot of the backlash you saw in Turkey, in Cyprus, to Al Jazeera came from a feeling of an injustice being perpetrated on them.
Yeah, I agree. And so, of course, number one, you have the United States. And the United States only at 1.8 billion, as opposed to Cyprus, which is 1.48 billion. The difference being is that the United States could easily be triple this if we had more visas. And the other big difference is that the United States is the only program which is a job creation program.
Well, there are job creation options in some of the other programs.
Not the same.
That's correct. So yeah, this US EB-5 is more or less purely a job creation program. And as you point out, it has this 10,000 visa cap. There, you know, lots of people were hoping that the interpretation of that would be 10,000 applications, but it turns out, no, that is actually individuals. But yeah, as you say, there's a cap. And it's not that America is not popular. It's extremely popular. It's probably the single most attractive destination for migrants internationally. It's just that America is also kind of hard to get. They say, okay, we only want a very limited number. So 7%, no more than 7% from any given country. Now, what has happened is they've always been far bigger than all the other programs. The US EB-5 used to be raising 3-4 up to 5 billion a year. Now, so far, so in the last fiscal year, they raised only, what is it here, 1.8 billion. Yeah. Now, how do you measure how much the EB-5 program is raising? I mean, it depends on your methodology, but the way I calculate it and the way IIUSA calculates it is that you count the number of I-526 petitions. You don't count the removal of condition. You don't count the regional center petitions. You just count how many people are saying, look, I made the requisite investment. Now I want you to consider me for a visa. And so when we count that up, yeah, it was 1.8 this year.
So Christian, as the United States is the highest grossing program, how come we don't see more about the United States in investment migration?
Well, the first thing I would like to say is I would love to have more content on EB-5. It's just that I personally don't feel competent enough to write so much about EB-5 because EB-5 is not... So unlike most of the programs that you have out there in the world that we write about, which are pretty straightforward in the sense that you have a real estate option, you have a donation option, maybe you have some other options too, but EB-5 is really more of a finance type of thing than it is. It's more finance than immigration in my book. And so you have to evaluate regional center projects. And I just don't feel like that's something that I can credibly speak to. I would love to invite competent stakeholders from the EB-5 industry in the United States to submit their article ideas to IMI. And I promise you, you'll reach an audience, a big audience, and an audience that you ordinarily probably aren't reaching. The second thing I would like to say to EB-5 industry stakeholders in the United States is that, look, so much incredible competence has come out of this EB-5 industry. It's been the global leader for such a long time. So many clever heads, so much hard work. You are limited essentially by the framework under which you're laboring. So you have a 10,000 visa cap. You have prices that are going up. I would say don't limit yourself to just EB-5. Diversify. Come to Europe, come to the Caribbean, go to Asia. Those skills that you've honed over all those years doing EB-5, when EB-5 was really hot, bring that stuff elsewhere. And I promise you, you'll blow a lot of the local competition out of the water.
I'm sure a lot of our developers are going to love this advice.
Christian, you mentioned that you would welcome the opportunity to have more EB-5 content on Investment Migration Insider. And who knows, maybe someday this episode will appear on one of those daily articles. If that were to happen, Christian, is there anything that you would like to say to the people that read Investment Migration Insider?
So to the readers of IMI, the regular readers of IMI, what I would like to say is thank you for the support that you give us by liking, sharing, and subscribing. Thank you to the IMI Club members who support us not just with their likes and shares, but also with their wallets. Thank you to all the advertisers who have helped us throughout the years. Thank you to all the people who have sent me fantastic articles that I have published on IMI, and which has enabled IMI to become a more informative, more useful, more helpful platform for the people who work with Investment Migration Insider, for the people who work in the industry. Investment Migration Insider used to be just a guy with a blog. Now, thanks to you guys, it's become a much bigger thing. It's become a community effort that's crowdsourced. The information is crowdsourced. The articles are crowdsourced. It's the watering hole of the industry. And I really, really feel grateful for that.
Christian, thank you for coming on Investment Voice.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I mean, I've had a really good time just chatting with you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.